I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories. Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife who left the system, and I'm now the proud founder of Sacred Birth International, a woman-owned company with a mission to revolutionize the birth world and bring focus to the sacred and the natural intelligence of the birth process. We do this by providing world-class education, courses, programs, and coaching to equip women with the knowledge and the tools to have conscious pregnancies, empowering and positive birth experiences, and the most nourishing start possible for themselves and their babies postpartum. We also educate and mentor aspiring birth workers into sacred space holders and physiological birth advocates in the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship, the Beyond a Doula Training. If you'd like to work with me or take any of our courses, programs, or the mentorship, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to find out more. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Carla. Carla is a mama of one from Sydney. She's a pelvic floor physiotherapist who's worked in some of the largest maternity hospitals in Sydney. Her work has involved supporting women as they recover from third and fourth degree tears, bladder and bowel incontinence, sexual and pelvic pain and prolapse concerns. Carla is also a yoga meditation teacher. And so during her pregnancy, she went on a journey to resolve her birth fears, especially the one about tearing and injury to her vagina and pelvic floor, and explore birth's spiritual dimensions. By listening to women's stories on this podcast and being in community with other women who has had a physiological birth, she was able to go from thinking she'd opt for an elective cesarean to save her pelvic floor to having a home birth in her bathtub. This episode is so good for you who might have a fear of tearing, a fear that is so common. Carla is excited to share her story with other women to help continue to alleviate birth fears and navigate the often paternalistic nature of maternity care. Curious about Carla? Find her on Instagram as Carla Sank. Now, if you didn't know already, I have three really epic free resources that you can access and download at sacredbirthinternational.com. There's two ebooks, one called 6 Steps to Having a Natural and Empowering Birth Experience, and one called Routine Hospital Birth Procedures, Inform Yourself and Make an Educated Decision. This is a comprehensive ebook with 28 full pages for your information and assistance in creating an informed birth plan. Whether you're having a hospital, birth center, or home birth, as you never know where your birth journey will take you. Knowledge is power. Finally, if you are planning a home birth like Carla, then download my free home birth checklist. There will definitely be things in there that you might not have thought of. Hi, Carla, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you?
Hi, Anna. Thank you so much for having me. I'm good, thank you. How are you? Well, it's brilliant to have you here. I'm really looking forward to hearing your story. So today we're going to hear about you moving from being fearful of birth and actually like considering having an elective cesarean because of that fear to doing a full 180 and ending up having a beautiful home birth, which I'm so excited to hear about today. But I also really love the journey. So I've come to see through my work and through absolutely interviewing women through this podcast that the women who consider an elective cesarean for the fear of birth are also very similar to the women who choose home birth or even free birth, because it's a reaction, you know, because of this over-medicalized system that we have, maternity system, where one in three women have birth trauma, the narrative around birth is so fear-based. So I also see that women who do understand the physiology of birth, just like you, who might have had that idea that I'm just going to go for an elective cesarean, actually swing the opposite way when they understand the physiology, when they understand the mechanism of labor and how amazing it can be and how beautifully it works and how actually safe it is most of the time, especially if you already come into pregnancy a healthy woman and with a healthy baby on board. So I would love to hear your journey. So please take us back to when you became pregnant and how your process to having a home birth was.
Sure. So journey to pregnancy, it took a bit longer than I had anticipated. It took about like a year of trying to fall pregnant and not really like sort of started to understand my own cycle, my own hormones and things a little bit more, because I've never really had a regular 28-day cycle. So it made it a little bit more challenging to know when the time frame was to fall pregnant, and had friends around me having babies. And I started to like get more and more itching to want to have, not because of them, but like life's moving forward. And I sort of like, when you see more babies around you, it sort of sparks something to really want it. So we were trying, as I say, for a while, and then like probably 3 months before Sunny was conceived, I went to an Ayurvedic doctor and he had prescribed me some herbs to try and like regulate my cycle and things like that, which was super helpful. And I'd done some like deep dives into understanding the female hormones, which I was embarrassed that I didn't know much about.
Which is so common though, isn't it? I mean,
right?
Don't be embarrassed, because this is just the state of the world. Like, you don't generally learn about these important things like the female body and our cycles and being a cyclic woman. Like, the opposite, we're very much taught that, you know, it's something you don't want, let's just medicate yourself out of that, or you have a bit of cramping, just get you on the pill, it's better anyways, then you can have sex and don't worry. That's kind of the lingo, isn't it, around it?
Totally. And even from like being in school and high school and having sex education, I just feel like it was really poorly delivered when I was receiving it, just all about how easy it is to have sex and like not really understanding females' physiology and understanding like there is a window of, you know, ovulation and that whole process. I know it's getting better now, but it's just been an interesting reflection, that whole journey in the space of education and women's understanding their own bodies as well. And so, yeah, we went, got some herbs, because I knew I wanted to do a more natural process to fall pregnant. I went to the GP probably when I was, well, actually was, I didn't know at this time, but I was actually pregnant. And she was like, well, let's do a blood test. Let's like get you to track your ovulation cycle through this process. And in the blood test she sent me for it, found that I was pregnant. So I feel like it was a process, as I say, to fall pregnant, but the timing felt right as well in my life's journey.
And during that time when you were trying to get pregnant and when you were pregnant then in the beginning, what were your thoughts about birth?
So I have a very unique perspective of birth. So I work as a women's health physio in a public hospital. So a lot of what I was seeing was trauma around birth, the physical trauma of birth. So it would be women who have third or fourth degree tears, women who have incontinence after birth, women who feel like vaginal heaviness, women who have sexual pain, like a whole lot of physical symptoms. But yeah, so I had this very much like, oh, birth is trauma and that's probably going to happen to me. So I should just opt and have the least, you know, traumatic thing to my pelvic floor and just go for an elective cesarean. That was sort of where my headspace was. And I had actually like, I had this like two mindset because part of me was like, I teach meditation and yoga. So I knew there was like the power within the body and the mind and that whole connection. But then the other part of me was like, well, I'm in this space of seeing all this trauma and, you know, it's been what I've known for 4 years. So let's just go.
Absolutely. You're so affected by that, aren't you? I mean, that's why also a lot of OBGYNs choose to have cesareans, because that is where they feel most confident and where they're, you know, they are not, they've probably never seen a natural birth ever in their whole career, even if they've worked like 30 years. Like, they just don't. They just see the emergencies and the pathologization of birth. And that's what you saw. You saw that extreme spectrum of when women really come out with that. And we know also that the medicalization of birth is the leading cause of those big tears and problems, like forceps, vacuums, inductions, pushing on your back, you know, having the epidural so you can't feel yourself pushing, you're just pushing, you know, forced pushing. So all of that is what really are the major factors of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting as well is like there's these two camps where it's like it's usually like women can have really extensive physical ailments to their pelvic floor, but if they feel empowered with their birth, their recovery and everything is so different to like someone who's had what I would see on paper looks like quite a good birth, but because they didn't have that empowerment, it was a lot different, the whole recovery process. So I knew there was that whole mind, body, and empowerment connection that was happening, but it was like you get seen so many different birth stories in such a like confined space of time that it's hard to really unpick what's been going on for women as well and in the system as well.
Yeah. Wow. So that's where you were in the beginning of your pregnancy. Then what happened that made you choose a home birth?
So I actually, because I work at the hospital that I wanted to birth with, when I was 4 weeks pregnant, I knew like it was really competitive getting into MGP. So I signed up, then I emailed the manager because I sort of just wanted all options open. And then I also contacted an obstetrician and I was like, hey, just sitting, you know, I just sort of wanted everything, you know, available to me. Yeah. And
for anyone who's not from Australia, MGP means midwifery group practice. So that means that it's publicly funded, it's connected through the hospital, and it's midwife led.
Yes. And there's like the option, I didn't actually know they offered home birth when I applied for it. I just knew that like women who had supported births with midwives had a good outcome from the very few I had seen. And then I also didn't really see like the private obstetrician patient. So I was like, you know, I'll go in those two camps of options. But it was actually only when I started like doing a birth course and then I heard about the podcast, your podcast, and interacting with women who had actually had physiological births, I started to realize that there was this whole scope of positive births out there that it was possible to have, and you could have an intervention-free birth. And that felt really empowering and inspiring for me to sort of like understand that journey a little bit more and hear from women that had actually had those births. So it's been really powerful listening to stories on this podcast. And yeah.
I love that. Did you find this podcast searching for natural birth, or did someone actually recommend it?
Someone recommended it. So I went to a a pregnancy circle locally to me, and it was a circle in which like a lot of women were having like home births or free births, and they were sharing their stories. And one of the women told me about this podcast, and then I just started listening to more and more stories, and it was just totally eye-opening to me, because for so long I had seen like the medicalization and the like lack of empowerment women have within the system of birth at the moment. So it was, even from a like from my own profession point of view, I feel like there's so much fear within it that like physios often try to take the controllable factors and advise women how to birth, which I've been reflecting a lot on, and I feel very differently to that at the moment.
Love that. What would be the advice before you kind of woke up to something different?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if, like, I guess within my team, because it's public health, I don't think we would always defer to the midwives, but I know colleagues of mine, there's like certain measurements you can take of the pelvic floor on like Valsalva, which is like when they're pushing down, and they can tell women if they're like likely to, you know, have a tear or things like that. And I was speaking to my midwife about this, and she was like, you know what, like we get women with vaginismus and all these things that have the most beautiful births, and it I just felt very like, I don't know, just very disturbed that people within my profession are advising birth without actually being at the birth itself.
Yeah. So, absolutely, because that's not a part of your education to witness birth or even or see a physiological birth, is it, or understand that mechanism. So, oh my goodness. Yeah, that doesn't sit well with me either. And also, again, like coming back to the body-mind connection, if you're told, oh, your pelvic floor is this or that, or your pelvis is this and that, or you might likely have a tear, so you should do this. The fear then and the programming of that from an expert that are supposed to know that will be so internalized, you probably will have a tear. You know, I think it increases the likelihood if you believe in that. So that would probably do the absolute opposite than what it's intended to do, which is to help, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I did this course while I was pregnant called Birth Choices, which was all about like the various risk factors for births and like where physios can sit in this space. And I just, yeah. And then when I did this whole journey into birth and understanding the physiological, I felt like a bit weird about some of the things that we tell women during, or that people tell women during birth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Birth. Yeah. 100%. It can absolutely add to the fear and like, and actually my midwife even told me a story of a woman who was told by the physio that her pelvic floor is probably not like extending enough. And she just straight away, like despite having like so many positive things and being able to be signed up for a home birth, she just opted for the elective cesarean. So it's a big responsibility that physios can have in this space.
Yeah.
Not the physios, sorry.
And, you know, even though that's coming from a good place, that physio probably robbed her of having a vaginal birth and her baby having a vaginal birth, which we know is so much better, actually, you know.
Absolutely.
For the long-term, you know, outcomes for health and well-being of that baby. Mm. That is such a sad story. But this is what we're seeing. We're just seeing this increase of cesareans, not elective necessarily. Like it's a lot of times actually kind of forced or coerced onto women because of X, Y, and Z. But we're seeing just this massive increase, you know, close to 40% and 50 even in some countries. Like it's crazy that every second baby is born through abdominal surgery, which is not an easy way out. Also, you know, the whole thing about, oh, you're too posh to push. Like that is not a thing. Like it's a huge abdominal surgery. It's not easy to recover from. A lot of women have complications. It's not, you know, you might quote unquote save your pelvic floor. Maybe not even, like, because, you know, it depends so much also on other factors. But what else are you compromising through doing that big abdominal surgery?
And a lot of women will have like maybe sexual pain as well if they've had an emergency or an elective caesar even.
And yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And just recovery and back pain and just connecting the core muscles. I mean, you know that as a physio, the core muscles, they're cut, you know, or it definitely impacts long-term for the woman as well, her health and well-being. So it's not a cop-out. It's not. It's made out to be. It's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyways, you and I, as, you know, birth nerds and pelvic floor nerds and all of that, we can talk forever about this. We're going to dive on into your backstory.
The enrollment for the Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship starting in August 2024 has begun. This mentorship is for you who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space in any birth setting, home, birth center, or in a hospital. You who recognizes birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring, safeguarding, and celebrating. I'm calling in you who have a longing to work with women throughout pregnancy, birth, and the postpartum, and who want a deep, rich, holistic, and comprehensive training way beyond a doula training. This mentorship weaves ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth knowledge and skills, as well as knowledge about medicalized birth, human rights, and sacred birth advocacy, as well as the art of sacred space holding and tapping into feminine embodiment and spiritual practices to help you become the clearest channel and space holder for women and their families. You will be so held and nurtured and supported for a whole year inside our worldwide community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. Through monthly live masterclasses, Q&As, birth debriefing and sharing in support circles, peer-to-peer meetings, access to our vast, rich, and comprehensive online learning portal, as well as one-on-one mentoring with me. This program is like no other in its depth of value and the amount of support that you'll receive. If you feel a deep calling to serve as the custodian of the sacred at the birth altar, and your intuition is ringing clear as you hear this, then head on over to sacredbirthinternational.com to learn more about this mentorship program and apply. Or click on the link in the show notes.
So, okay, so learning about all these things, you chose the MGP home birth program.
Yeah, so I started getting more and more confident that I could have a home birth. And I was really excited. I was like, I told my midwife that I wanted to have the home birth. And it was, I think I must have been like 35 weeks or something when I had like really decided. And she was like, great, she signed me off. And then I think like, a week later, she called me and she was like, you know what, Carla, your platelet levels are a little bit low, so we can't actually sign you off on the home birth. We're going to need you to get a blood count in order to do it. So I was expecting to get the home birth stuff delivered to me, but in actual fact, I had the news that I wasn't able to get one. And then once it gets like taken away, I was like, oh no, but I really, really want the home birth. So I spoke to my father-in-law, who's a GP, and he was like, look, the platelet count's really quite inconsistent because it's a manual count. So why don't you go get two counts, like at two different pathology places, and just see what comes out of it. And I did that. And there was like a 10 count difference between the two places on the same day, like with 5 minutes apart. So I was like, this is such an unfair thing to,
yes,
you know, not do a home birth fall from. And I got really adamant about the home birth. So I started to look at the hospital policies around like platelets and the home birth policy as well. And there was actually nothing in the policy that said like you need to have X number of platelets to have a home birth. But my midwife was like, yeah, it's not there, but it's just something everyone knows about. So I was like, okay.
And you know what? It's also different states, countries, yeah. Hospitals as well, just mind yeah. you. And also another thing is that this is the thing, when you go through the publicly funded system, there's so many things that kicks you out of quote unquote low risk. Like you have to be almost a unicorn today to be able to fit into the home birth category of like, oh yes, you're low risk. Like they just want to kick you off left, right, and center when you're in the public system. Truly.
It's so true. Even when I spoke to the head obstetrician, he was like, we have to have like these squeaky clean, like for lack of better term, policies to like get you through. And so I accepted the fact that, okay, maybe I'll have a birth center birth, but I want it to be like my way of having it. So I wrote out this full birth plan of what I wanted, who I wanted around me as well. And I gave it to my midwife and she said, I'll book you in with the doctor just so he signs off on it as well. So the day I had the appointment with him, actually started to get these mild cramps, but I...
How many weeks were you?
I was 38 plus 5.
Oh, wow. So late.
But he was like gonna... You
still hadn't got like a clear yes on where to birth yet. Oh, my goodness.
No, nothing. So I was 38 plus 5 and he was going to review the platelets and ended up seeing a JMO in the junior medical officer in the session. And I was like, and I thought I was just going to get signed off on like my birth preferences in the hospital. But I had this feeling that I really wanted the head obstetrician there to just like see this case and sort of plead my case as well. And he was like, he came in and he was like, yeah, no, it's fine. We'll sign you off for a home birth today. And he signed like paper, signed this paper. And I was like, oh, wow, amazing. I thought I was just going to discuss my birth preferences, but here we go. I got signed off for a home birth, despite my platelets being 10 counts off what they wanted. I called my midwife. I was like, hey, I just want to let you know I got signed off, but I'm also starting to feel these cramps. And she said, okay, all the home birthing equipment's like out, but I'll try source some things. Order the sheet online, like the birthing pool sheet, and I'll drop the stuff at you tomorrow, which was the Friday. And I called her on Thursday. I got the sign off, but that night I actually started going into labor. So it was like this like big relief of like, you know, pressure of what sort of birth am I having? And when it sort of like got approved, my body allowed me to go into labor, which, yeah. I think you get quite a lot on this podcast.
I love that so much. I love that so much.
Yeah.
So you're going into labor during the night. Talk us through it. Tell us a story.
Yes. So I actually didn't know it was labor. Because I had heard so many stories of women. I was like, maybe it's pre-labor. Like, I don't really know. It's mild cramping. I don't know what's going on. In the lead up to like, having these contractions, I sort of like had all these, maybe they're called false starts, I don't know, but like I had like lost my mucus plug and like discharge was changing and all these things were happening and I like didn't really know where I was at.
That's all really normal. That's usually what happens the weeks leading up to birth. You get really juicy, like around 3 weeks before labor, like you several times could think potentially that you peed yourself or even that your water's broke because you get so juicy. A lot of women think that. So it's really normal for anyone who's listening. And losing your mucus plug, you can do that weeks before and it grows back and it continues doing that. So that's also something that could be a sign, but could also not be a sign.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually had that where I thought that my waters broke, but it was actually not that. So that night I I sort of just took it as a normal night. We watched The Office in bed just for something like mild, but I found like I actually couldn't like every sort of so often I had to get out of the position and had to like, it's just like the pain was in, or the sensations was intensifying. And I don't want to use pain because it was more of an experience of intensity. And I had my dog there coming to like check in on me, see if I was okay during this time. And probably at about 11 p.m., I had a doula as well. So I called her and I was like, hey, I just want to let you know I'm getting these like cramps. I don't know what it is, but I just wanted to give you the heads up. And she's like, I'm going to come over. I'll be there soon. Just like keep me posted. And so she came at midnight. And she was helping me with like acupressure points. And she was like, no, this is labor. You're having this baby like, you know, tonight in the early hours of the morning. So she was there. And she, at this point as well, I should say, we didn't actually have any of the birthing equipment at our house, at our apartment. We didn't have anything. So she was like, my doula was like, are we going to the hospital? Are we going here? And I was like, I have no idea. Daniel, my husband, called the midwife and he was like, hey, Carla's having these contractions. And I think the doula must have spoken to her as well, Amy. And the midwife was like, I'll be there at 1:30. I just need to go past the hospital to collect the home birthing equipment. And I knew I wouldn't have a pull or anything because the line hadn't come yet or anything like that. So she arrived at 1:30 in the morning, and at this point, I had the labor tens on, which was super helpful for me. I was like bouncing on the Swiss ball. I was very much like having my labor inwards. Like I didn't really want external touch or things at a point. Like I was just like going with what my body felt like it needed. And I was going to and from the bathroom like every 5 minutes because I just felt like this pressure downwards. I think I also had this like fear of weeing or emptying my bowels in the lounge room, so I just like kept wanting to like go to the toilet and like, you know, which is a funny fear to have in labor because, you know, on reflection, like anything goes.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's also really good. It made you move, get up and down. It made you sit on the toilet, which is an amazing place for dilatation station, it's also called. And it's great to bring the head down. So, I mean, I think do what you, like you followed your instincts. I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah. It was very much like what my body needed. But then I was having these like contractions closer and closer together. And I got to a point where I was actually like having a contraction and then I was having this like really long pause or felt long. And I was able to just drop like to this really deep space inwards. And it was just this like stillness, like this peace inwards. And it was amazing. Like it was just like this stillness that my body afforded me to have. And it must have happened like two or three times where I was just like having this like pause. And then after one of these pauses, I got up and there was like this really intense pressure. And I just need to like push down. Like I need to let go, even if I wee or if my bowels go, like whatever, I just need to push. And my water's like broke in the lounge room on the tarp there. And the midwife was like, okay, go fill up the bathtub. Got my husband to go start filling up the bathtub. She's like, it's happening now.
Wow.
Yes. So then I go into the bath, rip the labor. I was a bit scared because I had the labor tent and it was so good at pain relief. And then I like had to obviously go from this point of like being in the lounge to the bath without like anything on me. But we got there between contractions. And the water was amazing. Like I just felt really supported in the bath and I was just like lying on my side and I never got checked once. And I'm so grateful for that because my body was just doing whatever it felt like it needed to do, and it wasn't interrupted with the knowing like how far I was or things I was able to stay in my body for my labor. I wasn't guided around like anything. Midwife and doula just stayed and watched, and it was just like allowing me to do whatever I needed to do to birth this baby.
It sounds like it also happened pretty quickly. So how many hours are we talking into the night? Is the midwife there for long? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, so midwife came 1:30. Sunny came at 3:20. So it wasn't very long. I was like super surprised, because first birth as well.
Well, also, this is the thing. Not all first-time mamas will have a long labor. And I love that. It's so important to showcase the difference. And it's, there's so many factors that make it long or short and all of the things, right? So beautiful. So yeah, you got into the bath, and during these hours that, kept on intensifying for you, did you ever hit a point of transition or where you felt doubt or fear? Yeah.
Yeah. Before I had those like pauses within my contractions, I had this moment where I was like, I can see why I was so close to being like wanting an epidural or wanting something more. I was like, I so understand why women go for an epidural. Like, it just got to that point where I was like it was like this where I almost felt like I wanted to, or I did feel like I wanted to ask for something more in the way of pain relief.
Yeah.
And I that would have been my transition. I was like, I don't know, if I can do it with just this labor tens and water as my options.
Was that happening before you got into the bath or in the bath?
It was just before I got into the bath, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the bath.
Perfect, like perfectly transition phase for sure. I mean, this is the thing. This is where I would say 99% of women get to. There's always going to be that, unicorn who doesn't have that, which is usually popping up on Instagram when I mention this, and people go, I didn't have it. Well, you're very unique. Like, most women go through this. This is the natural part of the process. Like, you get to a point where you feel like you can't do it anymore, where and also around that time, you have this surge of adrenaline before you get into the pushing phase. Like, that is also part of the physiology around that same time. So it's natural, it's normal, and it's great to anticipate it happening, because when it happens, you can go, I'm probably in transition, and it can help you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think also like in the lead up to birthing, like I didn't mention this before, but I had a lot of like conversations with my midwife and with my doula actually more about my fears around birth. And like, I really got to know what my fears were and what they all meant. My doula actually had quite a different birth, but she actually had a positive story as well, where her water's broken, she had an infection and had forceps and all the things that I was really scared about, but she was so positive about her birth. So it was really helpful to have her and to sort of like bounce my, or like go into my fears about birth, because I think also like a lot of the processing had happened before. So I didn't confront when it came to labor, I was like, I actually like whatever is going to happen will happen tonight.
Beautiful. That's what needs to be the mindset of like, when the first contraction hits, you need to let go, surrender, and be in faith and trust that you're carried through this journey, and that, what will be for the highest good of all. Like, kind of when you, because if you don't, that's been also, things happen whether you are or not, but you're more likely to actually manifest the things you don't want if you hold on to fear around it and resistance. And maybe that also is a recipe for you having a shorter first time mama labor,
possibly,
not meeting. Because when you do a lot of fear release before, you don't have to do it within that portal, because otherwise it will come up there. That's what I'm trying to say to women all the time. Like, and I do a lot of work with women around this, and I love when women come to me and go like, okay, I'm ready to talk about my fears now. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Because that is a huge part of the birth preparation.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was super, super helpful for me to confront that and to go through that.
Yeah. So is your bathtub big or small?
It's not super big. I'm not like a tall person, so it was like it was good enough. It wasn't a bathtub where like I couldn't really go on all fours and do things like I probably could if I really wanted to, but my midwife was like, you have to have the water at a certain height because obviously if baby comes, it needs to be immersed in water. Yes. But I was quite comfortable just lying on my side. Like that was how I think I birthed on my side. I didn't actually feel I was on my fours in labor, but in the actual act of pushing, I felt, yeah, I was comfortable on my side.
Yeah. And that's a really good position to birth in, especially if you want to protect your perineum, which you probably know as well, don't you? Like it's just like keeping your legs together or on your side and not too far apart. It helps the tissue perfuse in between, you know, that pushing when you are really pushing the head out. And so it's much nicer on your perineum and protects it. So it's a really good position to be in if you can't be on all fours or, you know, obviously, you know, more upright. But yeah, beautiful. So tell us about being in the bath and pushing your baby out.
Yeah, so it was the pushing just sort of like no one guided me to push or anything like that. It was just like my body was just deciding when it was like this sort of really intense downwards pressure. I actually didn't really like when I was in the water, it was a real a pain relief or like a sensation relief for me because it totally like I got pressure, but I didn't that the water felt really supportive. So for me, it was helpful. I know it's every woman's different and all their sort of options are different, which is why there's like some great options out there as well. But yeah, so it's just sort of like feeling when this like urge to push at different times. And I was getting this like pause in between and I was really able to sort of drop inwards. Like I was in a space that wasn't on this sort of layer of consciousness. It was like, you know, that deep layer. And I sort of like time and space, you know, didn't exist in that moment. But I do remember from my birthing course, like one of the meditations was like, feel your baby's head at your perineum and like feel the power of that crowning. So I remember like just having my hand there and just waiting to sort of feel Bub's head, like, and that power that comes from that as well. So that was like sort of a mantra that was sort of, or an imagery that kept coming up during that active pushing phase as well. And I think it was like, because I actually had a video of it. It was like a 17 minute to be exact pushing phase in the bath. And then he was born. And another fear that I had, because I had listened to a podcast as well of a woman sharing her story where like she had this fear of Bub not making a sound when they came out. So as soon as Sunny had his cry, I was like, oh my God, he's crying. Like he's here. Like that was what brought me back, you know, into post-birth into the world.
Yeah, that's the magic of the physiological process. Like you have this opportunity to really go into this altered state of consciousness. How was that for you? How can you describe that somehow? Do you have the words?
I mean, it was definitely like a transcendent state. It was just because I've been practicing meditation for quite a few years as well. So it was like that deep sort of stillness where whatever's going on around you, you're not quite aware of it. It's like this other realm of, how do you describe it? Yeah, it's just this, like I feel like stillness is the word I want to use, but it's also like this stillness, but like comfort in that as well, like this support, stillness and support maybe are my words.
Yeah, you're in that magical portal, that birth portal where source is so present, like the channel between the heavens and the earth is so open and the veils are thin.
I mean, and it's just that, like knowing that like you're okay. Like you're okay. Yeah.
How amazing is that? And that really does, and that is the magic of the birth design that women do not experience when they have an epidural or they have, you know, that medicalized birth, unfortunately. Mm. And I find this really sad because how powerful is that, like, to have that experience?
I know. It was so, like, it was such an empowering way to enter motherhood as well. And I know women will come and they'll have all different ways that birth's empowered them as well. For me, it was like, yeah, it was just like that trust in that instinct. And like now Sunny's 5 months and like just I still drop into that like instinctive place of like all the things that like I think or feel he needs. It's just like I feel like it had opened that portal from birth.
Yeah.
That inner knowing.
Beautiful. And do you want to talk us through how you experienced, like, did you have a ring of fire, that pushing phase? Did the physio, you know, pop up in your head and go like, ooh, you know, how can I prevent tearing? Did you have any of those moments?
I actually didn't. I don't think I don't know if you know what the epino is.
Yeah,
I was so scared of birth that I bought an epino, which was like, I don't know, $200, which is, must have used it like four times. But it's for people that don't know, it's like this little balloon insert into your perineum vagina to try and pump up this balloon. And you practice like birthing the balloon to experience what the stretch might feel like. So I had done that just to sort of like try and overcome some of the fears I had and also, yeah, just to experience what it might feel like. So that was actually more hectic than birth because you don't get your pregnancy, you don't get your labor hormones when you're birthing with the epino. And sorry if I'm like, if I shouldn't name the company or things like that.
Fine. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like not a natural birthing process to birth this sort of balloon thing from your vagina. So when I actually got the birthing hormones at birth, I didn't even think about tearing, to be honest. I just allowed whatever was happening to happen and hope for the best.
I love that. Yeah, you know, both perineal massage and products like that balloon that you can blow up inside to kind of mimic a baby's head, I think they have merit and can be used, especially more to like program your mind of the sensation. Not so much that I believe that it's not necessarily the tissue will stretch better. I mean, your tissue is made to stretch, whether or not you use props or your fingers to stretch it. I think more so allowing yourself to feel the burning or the stretching and breathing and relaxing and like surrendering into that, that is the key. And that can, you know, you can find help using those techniques or tools for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think I did the perineal massage as well. And I think it was mostly just like, yeah, getting familiar. A lot of women are really disconnected from their vulva, from their vagina, from their pelvic floor, like just to reconnect with that space.
Exactly. Yes, 100%. Exactly that. And a lot of women hold trauma from potentially, you know, sexual encounters and experiences in life and, yeah, dissociation, not liking what they look like or having shame or taboo around their vulva, all these things. So, I mean, that's a big thing that I work with too with women, like to love their bodies, to love their vulva, to like see her as sacred and this amazing, amazing, beautiful opening that will open and birth your baby, you know, open for your baby. So did you have a tear?
I did actually. I had a second degree tear, which means the tear's gone like into the muscle a little bit as well. And then the midwife, so I birthed the placenta on the bed and the midwife was like, do you want me to stitch it or do you want it to heal naturally? And at that point I was like, I don't want anything to be like giving me the option to stitch or not. I would not like stitches. So she's like, okay, just keep your legs like closer together and it should heal naturally. And then in that process after, I was like, oh, should I have gotten the stitches? Like, I don't know. But I was actually really thankful. Like, I have seen every tear heal in the most miraculous, like, beautiful way. Like, most vulvas, you don't even know you've had a tear after.
Exactly.
So I had confidence, yeah. But I also, yeah, like, I did second guess myself for a moment, but then I...
But that's the thing. If you have a midwife or someone knowledgeable about tears and the different degrees of them and so on, if a midwife looks and it's a first or second degree and it really easily comes together, you can see it comes together, then yeah, the option to heal naturally is definitely there. It's about then really honoring your postpartum rest, right? Because that's the key. If you don't, it might not heal as well, or it might take longer, it might give you grief. But if you do, promise yourself to stay in bed most of that first week, especially, and like having your legs together, never sitting like, you know, opening your legs wide or like sitting in meditation pose or just, you know, like squatting, all of those things, but you kind of open your vagina up, like you keep it together so it can heal and you can use beautiful herbs and warm water as you pee and all these beautiful things, then that's perfect. Sometimes a second degree tear can be a bit more like, oh, actually, maybe a stitch would be good here because it doesn't come together perfectly. So, but that's something that a midwife or someone knowledgeable can see who's at your birth. And also, you know, choosing the right provider, because some just love to stitch. They'll stitch even a first degree and go like, oh yeah, it's better than stitch, which is not true for sure. It just depends on your postpartum. Will you be able to rest? If you have 5 kids and you're going to be really hectic running around after little toddlers and not be able to rest the first week, which you always should, but I mean, let's face it, reality is not always like that, then maybe a stitch is a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, like learning the different tears and the options and like feeling empowered with your vulva is so, so important. Post-birth.
And I just love that, like going full circle, like, you know, from the beginning, like elective cesarean, keeping my pelvic floor intact, not in a fear of tearing. And then I'm going through it, this really empowering birth, not even scared of tearing, having a little tear, which is also, you know, a second degree is quite normal to have, like, and coming out and going like, yeah, I'll just heal it naturally and all this. Well, I love that full circle for you. And I hope that women who might listen to this who are feeling fearful about tearing feel this like, oh, like sigh of relief and going, because this is the thing, like our vulva heals better than our mouth. And we all know, like biting your lip, like biting your cheek, biting your tongue, it hurts like, eek, you know, but then the next day you forgot about it because it kind of healed. Like, and the same is the thing with our vulva. She's even better at healing.
Mm, absolutely. And also like there's, I mean, one of the ironic things is like that my role is to help women who've had like tears and who've had incontinence or any symptom post-birth to recover. And they, women that put the work in recover. So it's like whatever happens down there, there is a pathway for recovery and support. And like you just have to access the right people to do that as well. So you're not stuck with whatever's happened post-birth. Yeah. If something does happen that's unfavorable.
Our body's miraculous at healing itself, isn't it? And again, body-mind connection, the birth you have, how you feel about it, how you feel about your body. I think also you heal better the more you love your body.
Absolutely.
And treat her well, you know?
Mm.
Beautiful bad story. So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Well, I think, it's something we've touched on already, but I think really getting familiar with your own fears around birth or anything pregnancy, because those fears will hold you back from actually stepping into your power. So really get familiar, delve deep, like whatever comes up, just find the support to process that. That was super important for me in my birth journey. And also trusting your instincts, like if things don't feel right or if you feel like you can do something a different way, like just push it, trust yourself, because you're powerful, you've got this.
Yeah, I love that so much. I love that advice. Both of them, I would 100% stand behind you on. Thank you so much for sharing your birth story. It was a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much for having me, Anna. It was a pleasure being on and sharing my story.
Beautiful. Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.